Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, your weekly pod to help you earn, save and make more money. My name is Michelle Baltazar, Editor-in-Chief here at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. Here at Money, we're always talking about the power of small acts when it comes to financial decision-making and the big difference they can make over time. This is especially true today when many households are under a lot of financial pressure, as costs of your day-to-day expenses have jumped in the last 3 years. Compounding that problem is a systemic issue that affects women in particular, and that is the gender pay gap. Depending on the research you look at or the business sector, this pay gap can be anywhere between 5% and 20%. That's as much as $20,000 a year. That is the difference if you're a female in the workforce versus a male in the workforce. So that's pretty significant. So let's talk about this and how we can close this pay gap in the future. That is just not costing women, but families hundreds of thousands of dollars over decades of working. So joining us today is Roxanne Calder. She is the managing director of S10 and the author of two books. Her first was titled Employable, Seven Attributes to Assure Your Working Future. And her second book, launched in February, available from February 26, is Earning Power, Breaking Barriers and Building Wealth for Women. Roxanne, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
I'm good. And especially keen to talk about this because I can certainly follow your advice about boosting my salary over the next decade and more. But so congratulations on this book.
Thank
can
you.
I ask, what inspired you to write this? As I've mentioned before, you're a career expert, if you like, not someone who works in financial services.
So the inspiration, Michelle, I think came really from last year when the legislation for the gender pay gap came into place. There was a lot of talk about it and lots of people were actually confusing it with equal pay. And for me, that was the first starting point because I was like, equal pay has been a law from 1969. The fact that we think that this is a new law is pretty astounding for me. And then I started to read the reports. And if you go to the WGEA website, the reports in there are really easy to read, actually, and not normally they're a bit of a, you know, boring or yawn for anything like that, but these are pretty good to read. And the main piece from that, what that resonated was over the years that I've been working with women in the workforce, I had started to calculate the difference in earnings when women don't take up opportunities or don't back themselves. So well before this report came out, that basically says that women over a lifetime are $1 million behind plus over $100,000 behind in superannuation. Years before that, I had started to calculate that. So things like, Michelle, if you had come to see me for an interview and I'd put you forward maybe for a role that was two steps ahead and of what you had applied for, but because I could believe and see your skills, and then you might think about it and then come back the next day and say, oh, Rox, I don't think I'm ready for that. And then in my mind, I'd be like, gosh, I think that's going to cost you probably $1 million from that, not taking up that opportunity, not backing yourself. Or it might be other opportunities that I saw, because mostly I work with women, that I saw women not taking up, not supporting themselves because of this lack of self-belief, because of conditioning, because of self-bias, all these other things that come into play that cause that. So hence the book.
Yes, and stating the obvious, for those who did follow your advice and said, yes, I'm up for it, maybe I haven't done this, but I'm willing to put in the hard work. No one's ever come to you and said, Rox, I told you I couldn't do that job.
That's exactly right. And no one's saying that it's easy. You know, this is the other thing in the workforce today, the environment that we're in today, it's so vastly different. So I think sometimes, and I'm not saying for women, I'm talking about just general and across generations.
Yes.
Sometimes we think things are just going to be a given. So when we're given a promotion, we think it's just going to be a walk in the park, but you need to invest in yourself. You know, there's merit in hard work. And for all those people that you see that have achievements or success or whatever it is that you view, they've had to work hard for it. It mightn't look like it, but people work hard. And I think that that's part of the acceptance of what comes with it. And equally, when we talk about some of the issues in the workforce or the advice that I give in the book, and this is what I love about, you know, your program, it actually applies to men and female, because the other aspect, the other aspect of our environment, working environment right now, is there is a level of fragility in there. So some of these, you know, self-esteem issues that I talk about that pertain to women, they actually also, you know, affect men, and most certainly they're affecting our younger generation that are coming through. We have a higher amount of mental health and mental health issues coming through for the younger generation. So, you know, without a doubt, there is a high level of fragility.
That is really great to share that with our listeners. One, the mental health issue, and this immense pressure for the younger generation to be earning six figures right off the bat, to buy a house, to have the $5,000 bag, and so on and so forth. So that's why here at Money, we're always thinking it's not just about the money that comes into your account every week or every month, but it's also about your career mindset, because ultimately there's a study out there from the ABS that there are 800,000 sole proprietors in the country last year. So 800,000, that's not a lot of people, which means millions of people are really wage earners, and that is really the source of your wealth at the outset before you start earning assets, for example.
That's right.
Now, you have a very provocative question in your book, and you said, what could you do with $1 million? And this goes back to what you said, that all these decisions that we make compound over time, that you're like disadvantaged by this amount. I can certainly think of a lot of ways to spend that $1 million, rocks. But let's talk about how we can earn that first. Now, I mentioned small acts, small decisions. Can you perhaps share a couple of small decisions regarding salary or career that women and men should consider in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, because presumably it truly is different depending on your stage.
Sure. And maybe if I could qualify, the reason I asked that question in the book, what could you do with $1 million, is for three different reasons. The first one being, if we were sitting down having lunch together and we had a table of say, females, so four girlfriends sitting down together, and if I said to you, do you know that you're $1 million behind over your lifetime in earnings? Pretty much guaranteed, the five of you would say, no, that's not me. Because when we talk about this $1 million gap, most females don't think it pertains to them, but it actually does. Mm. It was me, because it was me in my 20s and 30s as well, when I was making decisions then. So I can pretty much guarantee 95% of women have been affected by this in some way, because these decisions are not necessarily the easy decision of, dear boss, can I have an extra $5,000? These are decisions that we make that stem from our lack of confidence or lack of belief or conditioning that cause us not to make certain decisions at work, not to take up opportunities, all of those sorts of things. So if I could maybe, you know, I really wanted to sort of state that so that it sits in everyone's head about that $1 million. And the other reason is, we sometimes think of this $1 million as like a lotto ticket. You know, oh, wouldn't that be nice? Mm. Well, guess what? It could be yours. And it's not via luck, and it's not via going to the newsagent and buying a lottery ticket. You can actually make these decisions for yourself to be $1 million ahead over your lifetime. And it comes back to, first of all, being aware. So knowing why you are making decisions and not just going on the course of, oh, don't worry, it'll come around next time. So if your boss comes to you and says, there's a variety of scenarios. So if your boss comes to you and says, here's an opportunity, and you say, no, I don't think I'm ready, and you assume that you can take it up next year, that's the wrong assumption, because there might not be another next year. And that 1 year could have propelled you forward, not just financially, but career-wise as well. So if we're talking about your 20s, so usually that's the stage where people are sort of learning, and what anyone in their 20s, anyone who's in their first, second, third job, graduate, straight from school, whatever it is, you should be surrounding yourself with people that you can learn from. And you should be asking questions, you should be putting your hand up the whole time for exposure to different things. And also, you should be working extra hours. And I'm going to say that because no one is going to say that. And it's the truth. If you need to stay back, stay back. If you need to come in early, come in early. Now is not the time to have what everyone talks about well-being and that balance. It's not the time in your 20s, I'm sorry.
You are trying to be controversial here.
Oh, I'm not trying.
We're off trend at the moment. Certainly when I was in my 20s, the view was, I'm learning, it's taking me a while to get to a certain stage with my writing, for example, so I'll be there till 8, for example. But now it's interesting that you're saying, I'm going to be explicit about this. Don't look at the clock. Don't look at it being at 5:30. It's about what am I learning today? And I'm so happy that you've shared that based on your experience as a recruitment.
I say that because I want to help people. Yeah. If I didn't want to help people, I just wouldn't say anything because I'm bound to get some people who are like, oh, that's not fair. We shouldn't be doing those hours. And I don't want to hear that. Like, I don't want to have negative, you know, feedback or anything. But
you'll get bashers on social media now, Rox.
I will. But it's the truth. And, you know, I say that, I give that advice to all of my friends' children who are about to graduate. And, you know, when they come to me for advice, I'm like, this is what you need to do. And if the rest of the crew or the group that have joined you in that grad class, they're not doing it, don't worry about it. You be that 5% that stays back and does the extra work, because that's what we'll see you being seen. And that's the effort. And plus, exponentially, you're going to grow so much in terms of your knowledge and everything else that comes with that. It also helps to develop that passion, because if you don't have that passion and that commitment to your work, it's hard to do those hours. You know, how do you do extra hours if you don't love or believe what you're doing? But equally, you got to put in a bit as well. So in your 20s, you need to accept the fact that you are still learning and growing. And in fact, the whole workplace is the next step in your development, whether we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. You know, it's the next schooling for us. So, and if we can embrace that level of what work means to us, instead of it just being an annoying part of our life, it's actually something that can help us. So then we get to our 30s. And by now, we've developed work habits. We're able to sort of roughly know what some of our strengths are. We're able to know the development areas. We've probably got a feeling of what we like, what we don't like. But it's still time to grow. And during this time, you should be developing relationships for mentors, people who can be supporters for you. You should be networking. And I don't mean networking in a way that is, it's all about me. I mean networking that shares information. And you probably also want to be making sure that you're helping the people who are coming in, you know, behind you. Those 20-year-olds, you want to be making sure that you're also assisting them as well. Now, if you are a woman in your 30s, 40s, and you are taking some time off for mat leave, because part of the caring responsibilities is what causes some of this gender pay gap as well, then what I would be saying to women is have an active decision on how long you plan to take off. And so if you take, for example, if you take 1 year, often I will hear women say, I really want to take an extra year. And I'm all for that. So I'm not against any of that at all. But I'm saying take an active decision and work it out financially. So because then you can make the right decision. Often we just go with the flow of what we feel or what the heart says. And the heart's like, oh, I'd really want to spend another year. That's okay. We'll be behind on our mortgage, or we won't be able to buy a place for another 5 years. That's okay. I'm all right with that. But actually do the finances behind it. And then when you've got the finances and the heart, then make the right decision. And then if you make the decision still to be take an extra year, it's the right decision then. There's no right or wrong decisions unless you actually have made a conscious effort in working it all out and not just going with the flow. And then it's an empowering decision as well. So I would say that I would also investigate your superannuation. And if you want to, and if your partner wants to do the contribution where your partner can contribute to your superannuation, I would be exploring all of those sorts of things. Before you're due back from your mat leave, at least 3 months before, start to be upskilling the skills that you'll need. We're in such a fast-paced environment now. It's not like it was 10 years ago. You know, you need to be skilled, not just necessarily on the skills, but also there's a, you know, every person that's taken mat leave talks about this, about coming back to the workforce after that period of time. And there's a, you know, some trepidation with that because you've been out of the workforce for a period and it might only be a year, but that's enough to set people back with their confidence levels. So start to be definitely communicating with work, with your boss, with your colleagues, and be start to upskilling 3 months before you come back. That's probably it for the 30s and 40s in terms of, you know, the female part, but I rather mat leave section of that. But I also would encourage people to always, I mean, I always say this, you should be saving money. I always say that regardless.
Don't we all? And here at Money, we also encourage micro savings. I think it's this idea that I need to set aside as much as 30% of my salary and I'm going to live like a monk for 12 months until I get that. Whereas micro savings is saying, hey, $200 into a share portfolio or what have you. But you talked about mindset a lot and habits in your book, because it's just the savings habit that you need to encourage. Now, on mat leave and the 12 months, or whether it's 18 months, I do want to acknowledge that it's such a volatile and emotional time for, especially for a first-time mom.
Yeah.
So going back to your point, this is not easy. It's not easy to be thinking about finances when you're going through all the emotional and personal kind of step change in your life.
That's right. And that's why when I say these things, because I'm a third party, as a, you know, someone who can look externally from that, you know, I'm able to say that because for the people in the moment, it is really hard. And you're right. And taking that decision to take extra time off can be the right decision. You know, it's whatever is the right decision for you. But if you don't explore everything that's involved in that and the consequences and the repercussions of certain decision making, then it's not an empowered decision.
Yes. And a very quick one on Super. If you're listening to this, just do a search on moneymag.com.au on superannuation, because sometimes when your partner is on a higher tax bracket, it makes sense for them to contribute to your super if you're earning, you know, $30,000 and under during the year that you're taking the time off. These are incredibly powerful finance decisions that you can make in less than 10 minutes. It's literally the wage earner going to their payroll officer saying, this is what I want to do. Can you help me out? And they'll look after it for you.
That's right.
So now we're going to the perhaps 50s, 60s. Maybe you're running your own business, or you're a CEO. What are the small decisions there that you can make?
So some of these decisions, and potentially, even though we're talking 50s and 60s, but some of these decisions could actually put, you know, sit in that 30s and 40s as well. So for example, if it's a salary increase time and you're expecting, say you're expecting 5%, but your boss comes back with 2.5, the difference of that 2.5 compounded is a big difference. So you mightn't have any choice but to accept the 2.5. But I would encourage people in all of those discussions to say that you're expecting 5 in a nice way, because it sets the tone for the next conversation. And then I'd be asking, when can I review this next? If you don't have that conversation, then people will think that you were happy with that and that was what your expectations were. And potentially the next time it comes around, it might be at the same level. So this is all about managing expectations in that area. To come back to the 50s and 60s, in my opinion, my strong opinion, that is all about upskilling in the tech area, because that tends to be the area, and I say that because I'm in that bracket, that tends to be the area that can, you know, we have some great skills in other areas, but on the tech space, you know, we really need to be getting ahead of that. So if you could be upskilled at work, and especially because of the rapid rate of the way that tech is advancing, then if you could be upskilled in those areas, then your confidence won't be affected and you won't be left behind, which obviously then affects salary.
Yes. My goodness. That's a trigger for me, the tech, the tech aspect, because now there are so many workflow apps, ways to be more productive. So you're constantly trying to learn all these new software in the office if you're, you know, in the corporate
sector. That's right.
My goodness, I just can't believe it. But time flies when you're having fun and you're learning. I do appreciate all these words of wisdom, because you have been talking to all these women over the years and their careers. So this is definitely a lived experience for you to be sharing this. So let's wrap it up with, what would be the one thing that is absolutely non-negotiable? The one thing that you believe our listeners should do straight after listening to this podcast that can make a world of difference to their finances?
I probably would suggest strongly that people, and this isn't an active thing, so I would suggest strongly that people have some reflection And what I mean by that is just sitting with themselves, because that piece to be able to observe and reflect is incredibly powerful. It'll increase your awareness. It'll increase awareness around you. It'll increase your knowledge and self-regulation. Because if you can have some reflection and not just have an auto reflex of that doesn't apply to me, then you'll start to dig deep to question the way you've been making your own decisions and whether it comes from a place of conditioning or whether it comes from a place of fear. And if it comes from any of those sorts of areas, then you should be questioning and questioning yourself. And then the next time it comes around, stop yourself from saying, oh, I can't do that. And instead think, okay, how can I get around this? So reflection, I think, is incredibly powerful for anything actually, but especially in this area, because it's such a difficult topic to broach and talk about, and it's complex and really tough.
Yes. And if carving out time for reflection is too hard, I suggest doing it, you know, go to the beach. So you're enjoying a great view. You're away all the, you know, distractions. But that is important. I think we all get so busy that we don't take time to reflect. And just going back to what you said earlier about getting a mentor, certainly for me personally, if it weren't for my two mentors earlier in my career, in my 20s, I wouldn't have made big decisions that truly transformed my career as well. And it's going back to what you said, oh, I'm not ready for this. I don't have the experience for this. And they said, Michelle, just go for it and just work hard and you get what you put in. And truly, that's one of my key takeaways talking to you about the way you work with your clients.
Maybe, Michelle, just to add, you don't have to have a career to have earning power, though. You can choose to, you don't have to have this high-powered career or anything like that. But you can still be ahead financially by having some confidence in how you negotiate and how you make decisions, all those things. So yeah, I think that's probably important for women to know and for anyone to know.
I love that. I think that relieves the pressure for everybody. It's like, I don't want to be a CEO or I don't want to be a manager, but I do want to have that million dollars. When I retire. Once again, Roxanne, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, Michelle.
Once again, I just want to say that I enjoyed reading your book. It's Earning Power, Breaking Barriers and Building Wealth for Women. It's out now. So before we go, if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast or this episode, please share it with your friends and family. If you have a finance question you'd like us to cover in future episodes, drop us a line on podcast@moneymag.com.au. Thank you for joining us. Until next, I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.